And to 27 minutes after the hour, it's time for our weekly conversation, something we really look forward to, our conversation with Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and member of the board at Creation Moments, and he lives in Garden Valley, Texas, just about 200 miles, just up the road a piece from us. And probably enjoying, are you getting a break in the rain now, Don, are you?
Oh, we are. It's overcast today, and it actually may even rain today. I don't know, maybe not.
Okay. Well,
it was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful day yesterday.
Yeah, and we had a gorgeous day on Sunday. Sunshine is about 70 degrees, just a gentle breeze. It was just nice. You got to understand, this is my first autumn experiencing a Texas weather down here. And it's a lot like Minnesota in the sense that everybody I talk to down here says, this isn't normal. That's the story I got up there for 35 years. This isn't normal. But I think what's not normal really is normal in the long view. And that kind of brings us around to our topic today. I saw this gentleman, Patrick J. Michaels, interviewed on television, watched him for about an hour this past weekend. He's the senior fellow in environmental studies at the Cato Institute, also was the Virginia State climatologist for about 27 years up until 2007. He has some rather distinct views on not just about global warming or climate change, whatever it's being called these days, but how science is changing over time. And you and I have talked about this on the air a number of times. Scientists are behaving differently now, at least in this field, are they not, than they used to be, say, 50, 60 years ago?
Well, unfortunately, one of the names of the game in science is being able to get a grant or being able to fund your research. And that's pretty much always been the case. The professors who were able to get grants typically were able to hire, you know, some post-grad students to help them do some work and some research. But things have changed because it's not just, let's say, maybe 100,000 or, you know, 500,000 for a grant. We're talking massive amounts of money in the global warming or the climate change area.
And where do these grants come from? Who initiates a grant?
Well, they are typically government grants. I mean, from some type of government institution. And their money, of course, comes from the government. And so it can be and this isn't, you know, just isolated to the United States. It happens in Europe as well. But there's been so much money pumped into the global warming research area that and unfortunately, this money is not unbiased because there's a certain outcome that is being looked for. And this is the problem. It's when you can't submit a grant proposal, for example, that says, well, I'm going to disprove that there is anything, you know, that there is global warming. And I'm going to definitely disprove that man's activity has anything to do with it. Well, in this day and age, that's not politically correct, and it's certainly not going to get you a global warming grant, for example, because all of this money is being directed towards finding a reason to make man be the brunt of why we're having global warming. Well, and this is the sad thing is that we have not been able to prove that global warming is taking place at all.
And incidentally, there's a link to this article that we're kind of focusing on in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. If anybody out there would like to kind of read along with us and analyze this thing, that'll get you there very quickly. It's a National Review article, again, by Patrick J. Michaels. Now, the interview that I heard with him goes into a lot more depth than does this article. And speaking of all the money being injected into science, his feelings is that this trend started with the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration and the Manhattan Project. And what it did is create a national science goal and interest and philosophy which over the years has snowballed into these not only millions, but billions, even trillions of dollars being funneled into scientific research on behalf of the government. And as you say, it's now worldwide. It really started back then in his thinking, and it was given a further incentive in the 1970s under Jimmy Carter's administration, when there was a group of people who had Jimmy Carter's ear, whose goal was to eliminate fossil fuels and convert the nation to nuclear energy entirely, an idea that he says originated in Sweden back in the 70s. So there are some historical trends combining here to create this 800-pound gorilla that we're looking at now, huh?
Well, there is, and as you said, there is an agenda. And when you have money and agenda, you can even take the most honest scientist sometimes, unfortunately, and turning him into trying to create data where there is no data. Unfortunately, the politicians these days are looking for a certain result, and that result has been influencing, especially in the climate area, certain groups of people, certain research groups, to really have a tremendous bias towards stating that man is causing all these problems. Now, if man's causing all the problems, then, oh my goodness, from a governmental point of view, we got to do something about it. And the best thing that we can do, of course, is tax the wealthy nations. For example, you've heard of the carbon tax. And depending on how much carbon a country produces will determine how much your tax is. And, of course, those underdeveloped nations will give them credits, so that they can go ahead and produce more carbon, but we won't tax them as much. It's just another form, as we've heard over and over again, of redistributing wealth, and this is just another plan and scheme of doing that. Unfortunately, it's not not the way to do science. I mean,
that's a major point of Michael's. He's kind of analyzed this whole thing from 30,000 feet and helped give me at least a big picture. He says there are 31 computer models that scientists regularly check to predict what the weather is going to do. And he says all but one of them had been shown to be wrong for the past 20, 30 years. It predicts a huge increase in climate temperature, but that's not being indicated by the actual data. And yet they go back to these models time and time again. And in Michael's view, this originated with a warming trend that started around the 1890s and continued in through the 1920s, when the average temperature of the Earth increased by about 0.45 degrees, so less than half a degree. And scientists looked back at that period and said, aha, it's a trend that must be continuing. And they've been searching to prove that ever since. But the data, the actual information garnered by studies and measurements all around the Earth over time indicate that trend was limited to that time period and is not continuing. But he does say that, there is more carbon dioxide in the air. And by the way, that warming from 1890 to 1920 was long before massive amounts of carbon dioxide were pumped into the atmosphere by automobiles and burning of fossil fuels. And so he says it's misleading, and science is going in the wrong direction, relying on these inept computer models because of the money and getting published and getting those research grants. And it's leading us down the garden path, so to speak.
Well, it is, but I mean, fortunately, we have climatologists now that are standing up against this and saying, hey, there's no evidence for global warming. Or if there is a warming trend, it's a cyclical trend that we've been observing for hundreds of years. So it has nothing. The point with all of this is man's involvement in his activities, whether it's burning of fossil fuels or whatever it happens to be, is that really causing a change in this case, is it causing a any type of change in the climate that therefore we need to regulate man's activities in order to prevent a catastrophe? All of this has to do with a catastrophe. It's hyped up science, and this is unfortunately, it's the global warming hysteria that has been propagated through popular magazines and through the news that, we need to hurry up, and do something, when indeed the science is not supporting it. The true science is not supporting it. And the true science is saying, hey, wait a minute, man doesn't, yes, there's more CO2 in the air. And as we've spoken about in past, past discussions, that increased CO2 causes an increase in agriculture, increase in plant growth. And increase in plant growth means that, hey, maybe we could have less hunger because we've got more plants growing in more places. And so therefore, that could be good for the environment, good for people.
And Patrick Michaels has addressed that very issue. He said that rainforests are growing by leaps and bounds, so is grassland around the earth. And yes, this is enabling the production capacity to feed the world for generations to come. And he just says, yes, there is global warming. It is warming, but it's normal and it's okay. And he's in opposition to this Chicken Little syndrome, which mainstream science, establishment science, is foisting on the American public, and again through some recognizable publications. He goes back to a man named Schneider who created a journal, a scientific journal called Climatic Change, whose goal was to sell the global warming philosophy. And apparently this individual had quite a bit of influence in the world of science at the time, because his magazine, again, was very influential in terms of what scientific writings and opinions got published. And this is back in the 80s in particular. So, this is contrived. It's contrived. Now, that's not to deny that the global warming is happening, but it denies that Chicken Little aspect of it, that tragedy will ensue, catastrophe will ensue. That's simply not the case. Science does not support that.
Well, the science does not support it, but what the science does support is that the Earth is in the ecosystem that we live in, is marvelously designed to, we've got more CO2 in the air. Now, we've got more plant production. Well, what do plants do? They fix CO2, make sugars out of them, make plant material and food that we eat. But they also pump more oxygen into the atmosphere, so it's a self-regulating system that has nothing to do with man. Now, if man chose to burn up all the plants in the world, then we'd have an issue. But as long as we have at least some seeds and some trees and some plants and some forests, the forests are going to increase when there's more CO2 in the atmosphere, and they're going to decrease. It just goes to show you that while one, there is a hysteria here that has been generated by a political agenda, but two, that the Earth and our whole system is so intricately designed that you go and look at the actual data, and it points to a wonderful creator.
Indeed, and while that's not the point of his article here, because he's not a creationist, but his view on science, I think, is spot on. And the overarching effect of this, he says, is that, well, even though science may be coming to its senses and understanding that global warming is not catastrophe, and that the role of man is questionable in this particular trend, but that it's okay. And he's saying that science first, if you remember back a few years, there was all this talk about acid rain and what catastrophe that was going to bring on. And now it's climate change or global warming. And he says, stay tuned, because even if this notion of catastrophic global warming is dispelled properly, there'll be something else down the pike that science will promote to keep us all on edge. Your thoughts?
Well, I think he put it, he says in one of his, in the end of his article here, it says, people often ask me how to stop the hysteria. And he says, it's simple, stop feeding our addiction. I mean, our addiction for for news, but more importantly, what's feeding the addiction? It's the political agenda. So we this the whole thing about the acid rain, and then you know now we got global warming, and then you know politics. At some point in time, we'll say, well, this is not really working. People aren't buying into it. The countries of the world aren't haven't bought into the system, and now the U.S. has left the you know the environmental group that was in France. We've left that group, and so we've got a big problem now. So we got to have something else to be hysterical about. So the answer to this question is for people to rise up and says, no, we don't want our tax dollars going to this. And so stop spending it on these type of things, and let's do some real research and see if we can't, you know, solve some real problems here.
And another way to look at this is that the government, and that means politics, has discovered that science is a very useful tool for them to advance an agenda. And the only way to counteract that is for the people to stand up and say so, say no, as you just mentioned. With respect to the Paris Climate Accords, he said that that agreement, and here he's in total agreement with the president, that agreement was supposed to cause nations to reduce their carbon footprint. Well, what it actually did was allow both China and India to increase theirs for the next 10, 20 years, while only the United States has actually reduced its carbon footprint over the years, and in the meantime has transferred a lot of wealth between nations, and is simply not working. It's like any other treaty. You get together and you agree on something, and only one party abides by that. It's no longer a treaty.
And, right.
You know, so and you abandon so it's, it. It's proper to abandon it. Yeah.
It's the United States that gets punished because we're the good guys and we follow the treaties and no other country does.
It does. Interesting, interesting work. And Patrick J. Michaels has a number of books out. He's, as you can imagine, kind of an arch enemy of establishment science these days. And there's a lot coming out about, he's funded by the oil companies, the energy interests, and so forth. And so he's involved himself in this brouhaha, and he's showing some courage and some spunk. But if you listen to the guy, he makes a whole lot of sense. And I'm glad we were able to kind of review some of his thinking today and maybe pass that along to people and maybe even, whip up some enthusiasm for getting politics out of science and let it do what it can do so well, because it has done some amazing things in the fields of medicine and technology generally. And you know, where would we be without it? Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to remind everybody that Creation Moments has a wonderful website. It's creationmoments.com. You can link to it from the Broken Road site. And there you'll find a wealth of resources, science that establishes and supports the biblical creation story. Don, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the time today, and we'll look forward to next week, okay?
Okay. Well, you have a great week, what's left to it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have sunshine the rest of the week.
I'm looking forward to it. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.